Well, anyway, all right. I wanted to talk to you off the record.
So now that the meeting's being recorded, I'm going to call the meeting to order. The packet that we sent on Friday. So the first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I move so. I just read through them in there as I remember.
Great. It's been moved and seconded. Tom, just a quick question for you about the minutes is that during your update, you mentioned your outreach to tribes and about the potential exchange with the U.S. Forest Service.
Yes.
And Secretary La Follette asked about the loan program and do we lend to tribes, and your response was we don't, and you listed, of course, the cities, towns, villages, counties, lake districts, tech colleges, those that fit within that criteria of the state trust fund loan program. And when I was reading through those minutes, I guess my question is it something to consider taking legislative action at some point to include tribes? Understanding that I know tribes don't pay a lot of, in many cases, they're exempt from state and federal taxes, but they do levy their own taxes. And is there a way to think through making that worth, and is it worthwhile?
So the issue becomes most of the borrowers that are specified in the statutes have either the power to levy a tax or an assessment. And you are correct, they have their own system of doing that. But because it lies outside of, you know, of the normal state procedures, we're talking about a different situation, and because they have sovereign immunity as well.
Mm.
So it's more the sovereign immunity issue more than anything else, that if something happened in such a way that they decided that they weren't going to pay, would that be something that we would have to take action in a tribal court as opposed to a state court? So what I'm saying is I'm not out. We have the, you know, in the Menominee County where the Menominee tribe, their reservation includes the entire county, and the tribe actually operates the technical college, which is also authorized to borrow. So it may be possible to structure it in a way that works. It wouldn't be a simple solution. It would take a lot of refining to get to that point.
No, I think that's helpful, and it just, as I was reading through that, thought about it as we're trying to develop a relationship, but you bring up a good point that I didn't think about with regards to sovereign immunity and the risk that could impose. So, all right, any other questions or changes? See none. All those in favor of approving the minutes say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
The minutes are approved. Moving down to approval of the loan, we have 16 loans, a little over $3.3 million. Is there a motion to approve the loan?
This is Doug. I also move, and I have a couple questions.
Great. I will second that. So, Doug, you want to ask your question?
Yeah, the first question, more of a comment. In Tomahawk is spending $500,000 for a bike trail. That must be quite a bike trail. I'll have to go look at it sometime. So that's a comment. My question is, on number 15, they're borrowing money for residential development. How can they be involved in what's basically a private residential development?
Well, Doug, this is Rich. Economic development is an approved loan purpose for municipalities. The village is buying an adjacent farm, a 75-acre farm. They intend to parcel off the farmhouse and a small plot and sell that parcel separately and then enter into a development agreement with a developer. They'll market the property to several different developers so that they can retain control of that residential development. Mark Epley, who is the advisor to the investment committee, recently conducted a study, and this has nothing to do with this particular loan, that the lack of available developable lots in Wisconsin municipalities has a direct impact on affordable housing within the state. And so we kind of view this as the municipality taking control of the situation and trying to move some of these projects forward while still retaining control. They've had an issue in the past in Fall Creek where a developer made a proposal, the city, and they didn't follow through with all the things that they had promised. And so I think that that probably plays into the situation.
Okay. So then, and then would the village would own the lot, and the and private person would build a home, would own a home sitting on the village property?
No, good question, but no, I think the, what the intention is for the village to sell the entire parcel to a developer who will then subdivide the parcel and develop it into residential lots. They just wanted to be able to retain control over that process.
All right, it was kind of, it's kind of unique. I hadn't heard about that before, but thank you.
It is, but we may be seeing some more of it in the future.
Okay, thank you.
And that's the one loan, Sarah, that I thought deserved special mention, so we already went through that. The other ones are relatively, a large number of relatively small loans for pretty standard purposes.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
And they have been approved for public purpose by the Attorney General's office.
Great. Any other questions about the loan portfolio?
Not for me.
All right. Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the loan, say aye.
Aye, Doug. Aye, Josh.
Aye, Sarah. The loans are approved. So moving on to some new business, there is a request about authorizing permanent conservation easement to a piece of land owned by the BCPL. Tom, do you want to walk us through the memo and kind of what we are reading in front of us?
You bet. The Secretary of State had pointed out that we were doing something novel with one of our loans. This is something very novel. In 172 years, I don't think that BCPL has ever sold a conservation easement against its reserved mineral estates. So back in 1909, when a law got passed that required the reservation of mineral rights and water power rights, BCPL's been reserving those rights over the last 100-some years, and we've now got 200-some thousand acres like that, but it has never produced any money for the trust funds. And so when we were contacted by a cranberry bog owner about the possibility that we would just waive those rights, I put on my thinking cap and thought, well, maybe there's a way that we can do something here that works for everybody, that we can do something that would generate money for the trust funds, would allow the cranberry bog owner and surface owner to be able to move forward with his plans of establishing something that was qualified to join a wetland mitigation bank and protect the environment. And so I did my research, and I concluded that we could, in fact, sell a conservation easement against our mineral estate. I prepared a memo, ran it by the our assistant AG to take a look at it, and they concurred with my conclusion, which brings us here today. The tougher part of it was trying to figure out, well, what's it worth? Because of the fact that it appears that there are no easily extractable minerals there. And while the surface owner was hoping that we would give those rights up for nothing, I realized that those rights have a value. And I looked for other comps in Wisconsin and couldn't find any, but I reached out to the Western States Land Commissioners to find out had any other states encountered this type of situation. And I discovered that in some of the areas out west, they do indeed. It's not swampland, but it tends to be vacant land in the middle of nowhere that's used for either wind power or solar power. And in order to do those projects, they also have to have the mineral estates. And out there, those rights sell for somewhere between $50 and $100 an acre. And so I thought that was the best comparable I could come up with. The surface owner offered to pay us $100 an acre if we were to sign that conservation easement, granting that easement to the Department of Natural Resources. The DNR is good with it. And therefore, we bring it to the board today with our recommendation that we do this. I do not believe that this is going to be a one-time thing. I believe that there will be more opportunities to do that. So we are, while this particular transaction may not move the needle a whole lot, it creates a pathway for us to do this again and again in the future. So.
Wait, and Tom, that's great. Thank you. In the resolution, which I'm looking at, I don't see how many acres are involved.
So in the they're looking at doing this in phases. So the first phase is roughly 40 acres. The second phase is roughly 80 acres. And I'm not sure if they have a additional plans after that, but that's what it looks like right now.
So 120 acres is what they want to start with?
Yep.
So that's what, how much money? $1,200?
No. But I guess is it annually, Tom, or is it a one time?
Oh, it's one time. Good question.
And I guess
what's the math? Is that $12,000?
Yes.
Mhm.
Okay, and so that isn't mentioned here, but that's okay. All right. So $12,000 is some lots of money, but as you pointed out, this is something that has sat there for 100 and some years, and doing this will basically protect it. And
mm-hmm.
protect it. So it strikes me as it's a fine project. If we tried to ask for a lot more, like $1,000 an acre, they would not be willing to do that because it's not worth it to them. So 100 is probably a good compromise.
I agree with your assessment. I mean, if we start with the valuation of swampland in Wisconsin, generally that carries a value somewhere between $300 to $550 an acre. So getting $100 an acre to join in on a conservation easement for the mineral estate, I think is a very good value for the trust funds. And I agree. Look, I wish it was a bigger transaction. I wish it was more money. But it's what's reasonable under the circumstance. And like I said, I believe it creates a pathway for us to do this again in the future.
Well, I'll make a motion that we approve this resolution.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. Tom, just a question for you is, based on the way the resolution is drafted, it talks about permanent easement. So the 120 acres are still going to be a part of BCPL, like on still BCPL's books, or is it not going to be on their books anymore?
So those acres will still be listed under our holdings of our mineral estate, but those holdings will be encumbered.
Yeah.
Which means if someone finds uranium, they can't dig for it.
Right.
They can't dig for it because we have promised, as the owner of those mineral rights, that we will not dig for it.
Yeah. Does the money go into the corpus of the fund, or is it distributable income?
I believe it would go into the corpus of the fund because of the fact that you are selling a part of your bundle of rights of that property, and it's not like crops or trees that can grow back. It's once you grant it, as the state treasurer pointed out, it's permanent.
Right. Yeah.
I've got another kind of a crazy question. the $100 is justified because it's swamp land and mm-hmm. it has low value. What would happen if the owner of a piece of property that we had had sold to them in the past decided they wanted to do this, but it was on really good forest land or really good, let's say that they had developed the property and the development was sitting on the property with our mineral rights underneath their property. At that point, would the value be much more than 100?
I believe it's a different valuation at that point. I don't know exactly what that valuation would be. When I approached it this time, what I was looking for were comparables of other lands that did not contain minerals and that the surface lands did not have much value either. But what you're describing is a situation where if the surface land had significant value, like you, as you were describing, it was an upland with majestic trees or wonderful physical attributes.
Or even structures. There could be structures built on that land.
Yeah. I believe it's a different evaluation, but as I stand before you today, I can't articulate exactly what that number would look like because I would go looking for comparables again.
Yeah, but it would certainly be more. Is there any? There's literally thousands of acres out there in this situation. What if we contacted all the owners of the land and told them that we have now decided that we wish to deal with the mineral rights, and those mineral rights will be available to Exxon or British Petroleum or whoever would like them. But before we sell them to a corporation, we would like to offer them the option of a permanent easement if they wish to buy that on their property.
The question you're posing actually has a couple different pieces to it. And so when I approached the problem this time, I looked at it from a couple different angles. The question was, how could we obtain some value for our mineral rights? And there are three main avenues that you could choose. One is to sell those rights outright. The second one is to, in essence, waive the rights. Say, if we get paid, we will just waive off whatever we have. And the third one was to sell a conservation easement. I was most comfortable with the analysis that we had the power to sell a conservation easement. I had not confirmed that we had the power to do the other two. And so that's why it was brought to you in the form of a conservation easement. If you are offering something to the surface owner, the first thing the surface owner would generally ask for is, can you just sell me the rights? And so I agree that the idea of looking through our portfolio of mineral rights and trying to find other opportunities for conservation easement sales is a very good one. But I think I'd like to do it a little bit more targeted, to look for it in areas where that I know Gathering Waters or one of the other groups is spearheading an effort to develop conservation easements on those watersheds. So, but we serve at the pleasure of the board, and if the board wishes us to contact all of them, we could do that.
Now, well, I was just thinking it might be a source of a lot of money if someone had built property that they had I don't know the answer to this. On thousands of acres that we have sold, some of that must be have been developed with fairly serious developments like marinas or beautiful cabins in the woods or something. And those owners would not be happy if the mineral rights suddenly went into the hands of someone. So they might be quite excited about having a permanent easement to protect their property from any disruption. Anyway, just a wild idea.
Doug, this is Sarah. So it's interesting that you mentioned this, because this is something that I brought up in the spring with back then Jonathan, Barry, and Tom, just because it's something that the Western states do a lot of with mineral rights, and it is a revenue stream into their school funds. Our conversation back then was that it's a lot of work and potentially a very low return. And just knowing that the agency is got minimal capacity, and looking at the state trust fund loan program and investment management and the land, it's best to kind of parking lot that, is kind of where we left off. But I'm curious if your thoughts have changed, like, since that conversation we had in the spring.
No, my thoughts are still the same, that I think this is an interesting possibility, but it does require some heavy lifting. And as I said just a little bit earlier, that a targeted approach may yield some more results, but I think a comprehensive approach at this time would not be a wise use of agency resources.
Okay, I can live with that. I'm just, if we ever had the time, I would like to have some sort of an inventory of what is on the land that we have sold. Is it farmland? Is it forest land? Or is it development of very valuable properties that the owners would like to protect? But anyway, I agree. That would take some research, and we can put it on hold for now.
Well, and Doug, I will say that when I talked about the goals and priorities last meeting under the lands goal, we did have a priority talking about land inventory. And so I think that is definitely something to look at and come back to.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? I think it was a good discussion.
I vote aye.
So all those, seeing that there's no more discussion, all those in favor of approving the proposal as written on the bottom of page 11, say aye.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, Sarah. Great. The resolution is approved. Moving on to report. The Chief Investment Officer, Rich.
Thank you, Sarah. We're making progress on working with our portfolio management software to improve our reporting capabilities to both the investment committee and the board. Currently, we're making sure that all of value data for LP investments is properly entered, which must be done manually for investments that do not have published prices that can be downloaded into our system. We're also determining the calendar and the content of different reports that detail the status and performance of our investments. And hopefully over the next few months, the board will see some results from that work. Also, I think you might remember that back in April, because of the potential impact of COVID, the investment committee suspended the process of moving forward on formalizing and funding $80 million in commitments to open-ended real estate funds. Well, that suspension is now coming to an end, and the investment committee will be discussing over the next few weeks whether or not that timing has improved. You know, the two issues include whether or not real estate markets have changed so much that we may need to reconsider the specific funds selected, and whether prices of the real estate owned by these funds reflects the new environment. You know, there's a lag time as far as the appraised value of these properties is concerned. Overall, you know, the investment committee did a good job on selecting well-managed funds that invest in property types that we believe will perform well moving forward, strong tilts towards industrial and apartment properties. I believe it's been prudent to suspend these investments to get a better understanding about the long-term effects of COVID on these markets, but there also is an opportunity cost in the terms of lost income for holding cash that now pays close to 0% interest. Also, we're going to be considering a fund that invests in debt secured by infrastructure projects. These projects are well-seasoned projects with stable cash flows, so that the debt is considered very safe, and the fund has a targeted return of 7% distributable income. And we will keep the board well informed about the progress of these discussions. That's all I have for today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Tom.
I'll try to keep it short today. This is our first day, first meeting with our new Deputy Secretary, Jim DeLulio, here, and we welcome Jim, and we're glad he's with us. We're working on our biennial budget request. It's due in a couple weeks. And for the most part, the VCPL budget request tends to be pretty straightforward and simplified, but we're looking at a couple of new wrinkles this time around. We may be the only state agency that does not have a gifts and grants line appropriation. In essence, no separate line to spend money that people grant or give to us. And so that would not cost the state any tax dollars. It would just allow us to be able to spend gifts or grants that are given to us. We are looking at a separate appropriation for PILT on lands that we have acquired either through land banking or exchanges. We step into the shoes of the prior owner. And so if the prior owner was paying X dollars of property tax, we would pay X dollars of PILT. And when we first started land banking, that number was zero because we had no prior obligations. But over time, that number has grown. And if we're able to complete our exchange with the Forest Service, our annual PILT obligation will be roughly $25,000. Because PILT is really a form of shared revenue that goes to the local community as opposed to an agency expense, it should be accounted for that way. It should be appropriated for that way. And so we're looking at asking for a separate appropriation for that. We're looking at asking for a reinstatement of a Knowles Nelson stewardship earmark for DNR acquisition of BCPL school trust lands. When we started land banking back in 2006, that earmark, which was approved unanimously by both houses of the legislature, was $2 million a year. And it helped the DNR make great strides in acquiring BCPL properties that they had deemed important and a priority for them. But when the law changed, the acquisitions by the DNR stopped cold. And so we are looking at asking for a reinstatement of an earmark, but at a lower level than it was before. So, and the final thing that we're looking at doing is considering reviewing the change that moved us from program revenue to GPR, and considering moving back to program revenue, which would give the agency a little bit more breathing room in terms of its ability to spend the necessary resources it needs to be able to manage the resources and assets for the trust beneficiaries. And we will keep the board apprised as we get to the point where we're submitting our budget request.
Tom, that reminds me, that brings up a good question. Who were the motivators of that change from program revenue? Was it the Governor Walker administration, or who pushed for that?
Senator Strobel was the one who pushed for it.
And do we have any idea of whether he would still be upset if we tried to change it?
I try not to assign intentions to individuals.
Okay. I withdraw the question. So I guess you think there's some chance the legislature might go along with it at this point.
We're in a tighter budget environment than when this occurred. Whatever the intention was last time, the priorities have moved on both sides of the aisle. And so I think it would be more warmly considered than it was.
Okay, good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll be quiet. Thank you.
As I noted previously, we've got more potential submerged land leases working their way through the process, and I expect that we'll have another one on the board agenda for the next board meeting. And finally, the DNR is creating a new year stakeholder committee in the hopes of developing recommendations that address concerns and areas of conflict between snowmobiling, forestry, agricultural communities, and some of BCPL school trust lands are significantly negatively impacted by deer browsing. And it's great to have a seat at the table to discuss these matters. John Schwartzman, our Lake Tomahawk Forestry Supervisor, will represent BCPL at these committee meetings. And that's all I have for today.
Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. Any questions for Tom?
Nothing for me. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Josh. So my report, just two things to share with the commissioners. One is that the BCPL has been invited to participate in the broadband task force. As Josh and Doug, you might be aware, recently the governor announced his work to really think through how we can improve broadband, especially in rural parts of the state. And we have been asked to be a part of those conversations and kind of thinking through things creatively. And so we will be participating and keeping you guys apprised as we move forward with that and if there is a role with the BCPL and what that might look like. And then the other update I wanted to share, building off of what Rich talked about and doing a lot of, and we've been doing a lot of investment work around real estate, and one I think is worthwhile to point out to the commissioners is a potential opportunity in Wisconsin. So we recently met with a fund that is looking at workforce investment, workforce housing investments in the state. We have one of the worst workforce housing. Our vacancies are incredibly low. A lot of our housing stock has not been improved since the 90s, and with population growth, we are very behind. And it's actually impacting businesses and their considerations and even moving into places across the state. And so I think we're looking at something that could be really interesting. An example of one of those workforce housing opportunities is in Marinette County in Wisconsin. The Navy has just partnered with Marinette Marine, and they want to bring over 1,000 jobs to Marinette County. In partnership of at least a 10 to 20 year agreement worth over $5.6 billion, which would be critical economic development money for that part of the state, generate jobs. But there's no place for people to live. And so we are seeing these across, whether it's in rural Wisconsin or urban Wisconsin. And so as we kind of are doing our due diligence with this investment opportunity, we will keep you guys posted. And I think it might be worthwhile to even bring in the fund managers to talk about this deal with the commissioners, since it's right here in our own backyard. So that is just an investment update, and that's all from my end. Any questions? All right. Seeing none, are there any new future agenda items?
None for me.
No, I'm good.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Done.
I'll second.
Great. All those in favor of adjournment say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh. All right. Have a good week, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Oh, no. Thank you.